This has got to be the longest week between weeks that we've ever experienced between episodes, right? Like, it's crazy.
quite a lot has happened, obviously, in the world, but also in Apple.
Yeah, I mean, we literally have one day in between recording. Usually we have a week in between. We've got a week and a day, so it is longer.
Yeah.
But yeah. Man,
and
like,
a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, it was jam-packed like a few days ago, you know, and now we have even more information to discuss. First thing being WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. What is it this year, Mayo?
Yeah, so unsurprisingly, they announced, as we talked about before, that it's going to be an online-only event. In classic Apple PR fashion, the press release was written incredibly positively, but they did obviously address, like, because of the public health situation,
yes,
they can't do an event in San Jose like they would have wanted to, and so they're doing, quote, an entirely new online format packed with content. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of tell that they're not really ready yet because they don't even have a date beyond June. Like, it's not June 2nd. It's not June 10th. It's just sometime in June.
Yep. Coming this summer. End of June kind of thing.
Yeah, like, we were talking a bit about, are they going to announce it later? Are they going to wait a bit longer? And they announced it at the end of the week on a Friday, but there wasn't much substance, right? They're just getting people aware so they don't have to book hotels and they can cancel any flights and don't worry about travel arrangements. It's going to be online only, but they haven't really said anything beyond that. We don't know if they're going to do, like, because obviously in normal years when they do the online component, they stream the keynote and they stream some sessions, almost all sessions, and then all the videos up online. Maybe this year they'll have, we don't even know if the sessions will be like live streamed anyway. They might be pre-recorded, right? Like, they could just record the videos and upload them. They do that. They've done that in previous years for some of the, like, because in a normal WWDC year, their schedule, they have to fit in a 5-day timetable of the conference. So mm-hmm. when they have more videos than what can fit on the timetable, they pre-record some anyway and just upload them, and they're just audience free and they have the videos on there. So this year, those sessions, that could be every session, it could be some sessions. It'd be a bit weird for them to live stream to no audience. And that's for, like, the technical developer sessions, right? For the main customer keynote, we assume there'll be a keynote. It does say an online format with a keynote and sessions. So if they're saying keynote in that regard, I'm expecting they still want to hold, like, a traditional presentation thing. And maybe they're hoping by June they'll be able to invite some people to come and look, and like some limited press. But if not, then they'll just do it to no one. Mm-hmm. We don't quite know yet. Like, I think ideally in their heads, they'd like to do a standard, you know, Steve Jobs Theater presentation for the software unveilings. But if their push comes to shove, they'll just have to do like a pre-recorded video thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really, because we know that they've got so many components down on this that they can do. For most people, that WWDC is a remote thing that you see the videos online and the resources online, including the keynote. I mean, you've got to pay, what's the ticket price for WWDC?
$1,600.
Yeah, that's to attend the keynote, for example, unless you're invited. And so that, you know, that's, most people get to experience that. But what we don't know is how they will bring the interactive nature of WWDC when you've got access to an engineer that works at Apple that's working on the problem that you have. So it's, you know, it would be reasonable if they just didn't have that component, but you kind of get the sense that they want to have something more, which is why they're being so vague so far.
Yeah, they do have a line where it says to gain early access to the future of Apple platform. So that means obviously they're going to release the betas of iOS 14 and mm-hmm. macOS 10.15 and watchOS 7 and tvOS 14. And then it says, and engage with Apple engineers. And presumably the engagement is going to be more than just them uploading videos. So they're probably going to try and have some substitute for, like, the lab sessions where you go in and chat to people. Maybe it'll be like limited webinars. Maybe it'll be like question answer sessions of some description. We just don't know yet. And to be honest, I don't think Apple knows yet. Like,
right.
It's still very much in flux. They're still working it out. They're saying, stay tuned for updates. We'll let you know in the coming weeks mm-hmm. through, like, the web and the Apple Developer app for more information. Like, it's not ideal for anyone, right? This whole world thing, but they're doing the best they can with the information they have and the resources they have. They're lucky they have even like a massive theater on their campus that they can even use. Like, otherwise it'd be even more complicated for them to arrange. But we'll have to see what happens sometime in June. And by the way, by saying June without a specific date, it does give them a bit more flexibility in the software pipeline, because normally there's a massive rush to get the beta 1 seeds done for the first week of June, which is normally when WWDC is. And the first beta seeds have to be frozen, so like no code, no additional code is written by like the first week of May. If the disruption to productivity and people working from home and engineers struggling to get stuff done, as you probably would expect is going on, at least in some capacity for Apple engineering, they could hold the conference later in the month just to give a couple of extra weeks for the beta seeds to be a bit more fully fledged and a bit more stable. They don't have to specifically lock it down to this set date. And who knows, maybe they could do something where they have a little mini keynote, quote unquote, where they just like preview everything and with like a few bullet points, and then they could do separate feature videos for every single platform if they wanted to. They have a lot of flexibility because they're not stuck to, you know, a timetabled schedule of we have five rooms in this conference theater and we have to, you know, fill out a day's activities for 5 days in a row. When you're doing something online only, you do have more flexibility to do more stuff. At the same time, they're also facing, you know, massive productivity problems and just how to get stuff done when everyone's working from home, not in the same place, can't organize stuff as easily. All these legal restrictions keep coming in, you know, for public health reasons. And so it's all very much in flux. And we literally just don't really know beyond they will have videos of some description.
Yeah, we know a little bit more than last week, not a whole lot more. They've kind of answered what everyone's assumed, which is no physical event, all digital, sometime in June, which is kind of what everybody believed. It's too bad, but I have seen some people take the positive spin on this, which is that it is because we're all in the same situation that it feels more like it's one big event because everyone is remote instead of having kind of that. You see the people who are present there and you get one experience if you attend and you get another if you don't attend. That it just turns a community. And I've seen a lot of efforts to kind of make up for the lack of in-personness that's there. And I think
we're going to arrange some stuff, right?
Yeah, we're going to arrange some stuff for my Watch Time podcast. I want to do a virtual run. I'll have a virtual 5K. I'll have more information about that the closer we get. But yeah, and it's one of those things too. I was thinking about it. It's like we could do this every year. It's just that this year is motivating us specifically to do it, you know, for sure because of the situation. And then maybe by next year, you know, if things return to normal, that would be awesome. Then we'll have this experience, you know, and we can do it again. So it's not all bad. And for one, you know, I'm looking forward to WWDC in whatever shape it has. So that's nice. Yep. Let's talk about
products.
Products.
First thing of the week. Mm-hmm. Power Beats.
Yeah, this is funny.
Which you actually got.
Yeah, I received these last week to review kind of test out a little bit and to understand. And man, these Power Beats, they're what you would think of as Power Beats 4, which is what we would think of as Power Beats Pro before they were called Power Beats Pro. We just assume like all Power Beats 4 because we've had Power Beats 1, 2, 3 wireless and the next would be called 4, but they dropped the number entirely as far as I can tell from all the marketing and branding. And these are just like the corded version of Power Beats Pro where they do have the big redesign from Power Beats 3 to Power Beats Pro. It's that same design, but there's a cord in between each earphone, which for some people I've discovered is preferred. So it isn't just that you get, like wireless headphones or wireless earphones with features like Apple's latest AirPods and AirPods Pro and, for that matter, Power Beats Pro. You save $150. So, or $100, it's $150 instead of $250 for these, which is a price drop from Power Beats 3 at their retail price, which was $200. Those have been sold for as low as like $70 and $80 in the last few weeks, you know, if not longer. So it's hard to, you know, you can definitely say it's a price drop, but for some it will be a price increase because these are the newer, better models. It's just that Power Beats 3 Wireless kept their old price for probably way too long.
At least at Apple official retail channels.
Yeah. And
you assume at some point the Power Beats 4 will go even cheaper because they're cheaper to start with.
That's right. And so, exactly. So the new, I've been calling them the all new Power Beats because they really do feel like they're worthy of that. They're inside, they've got the, what are we on now? It's H1 chip.
H1, yeah.
Yeah. So the Power Beats 3 were using the W1 chip that the original AirPods had and the same that Beats X have. And so you didn't get the voice activated Siri stuff, and you had a little bit worse latency. I guess this kind of affects battery life too. And so now you've got that with the new Power Beats. There's no noise cancellation or transparency, audio pass through, because Power Beats Pro don't have those features. So it'd be a little bit weird to offer them a cheaper version with a cord, even though it exists now. And I think that's all right. I tried them out. They are, I mean, as far as I can tell, they're Power Beats Pro with a cord. you know, the difference is that, you know, is more between Power Beats 3 and then these new Power Beats. It's just closer to what you get with Power Beats Pro. With the Pro versions, you know, those are truly wireless. So you put them in a charging case and charge that via Lightning. There's no case here to be, you know, managing charging, because they've got a cord in between each earbud. So it's got a Lightning port built in instead of a micro USB port built in for charging, which is nice. Beats X have that, but Power Beats have not had that before, except for the case on Power Beats Pro. One thing I found different in using these that is, you know, you only pick it up if you're used to using Power Beats Pro, which is that on Power Beats Pro, you've got something I called out in the original review of those, is that you've got symmetrical controls. So if you change the volume on one, that same clicker will do it on the other one. And it's designed that way because if you just have one end, you don't lose out any functionality. So you've got the B button on either side that you can click in and, you know, click for different tasks and everything. There's no power to toggle for Power Beats Pro, which can be annoying because they can be kind of turned on when they don't need to be based on the presence sensor. In these, there's no presence sensor. It's just, it's in your ear or it's not. You know, maybe there is, I'm not sure, but it doesn't power down. The way that you power it is that you hold a power button to turn it off and on and sync. And that the B button on that side, I believe, is just like stiff. It doesn't do anything. And on the other side, you got a volume rocker, and then you've got an action button and the B button where you can control playback and everything. So it's kind of like, you know, you've got to learn where things are, but it's, you know, not that bad. And for, you know, $100 less than Power Beats Pro, they're nice.
They get more battery life, right?
Yeah, so it used to have...
it used to be 12 hours, and now it's 15.
Yeah, 12, and I got 15, which is, you know, that's a lot of hours. On the Power Beats Pro, it's like 9 hours per charge, right? And then you've got the case to give you additional charging. 24. Yeah, up to 24. That's a long time, and you got to be charging in between. But 9 hours, like, I'm comparing all these things to AirPods with 4 to 5 hours battery life, and it's like, man... 9, 15 hours, like, you just don't think about it. You just charge, you know, either nightly or weekly, depending on how much you use.
I can see people picking these over the Pros, not just on the price basis, because of, like, the battery life situation. If you do just want something, because the problem with the Pros is the case is pretty big.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
The AirPods charging case is so small, it's like, you know, perfect. And the AirPods themselves, you wouldn't want, you know, you generally don't want them just, you know, jingling around in your pocket because they, you know, they're so tiny. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Power Beats Pro buds are big enough where it feels like you can just leave them in the pocket on their own, but then you kind of want to have the case with you, and the case is pretty big, and then it's kind of a pain. Whereas the Power Beats fourth generation, they're just, you know, they're just the buds on their own connected by a wire, so you're getting pretty long battery life that would last you probably 2 days, you know, if you're doing 7 hours a day or whatever between charges. So if you're going away for the weekend, you might just want to take these rather than having, you know, one of the charging case, rather than to worry about one of the charging case things. And obviously, they're $100 cheaper.
Yeah, and they do come in a little bag, a little carrying case. So if you want that, you can use that. It comes with additional ear tips, just like Power Beats Pro, where you can change out the ear tips to your kind of size and everything to get the right fit. It has a tiny little black Lightning to USB-A cable, so not USB-C yet, like the iPhone. But it's really, really short. It's really cute. So I found these to be nice. I personally, it's kind of like the Beats Solo Pro headphones, where it's in that class for me where, like, those are a little bit too small physically for my head, and they've got noise cancellation and transparency. And there's not an Apple or Beats headphone that has that above that. There's Beats Studio that has noise cancellation, but no transparency. And, you know, like it's, but the Studio Pros, I wouldn't go out and buy on my own. And, like, I've got them to review, and I reviewed them, and, like, but I don't pick them up every day. And these are in that class where, you know, if like $250 headphones were just out of your budget, then this is the next best thing. And I think that this is a pretty competitive price, especially when they go on sale. But in terms of just my own use, I like that they come in red, which is a color that you can't get Powerbeats Pro in. You've also got black and then you've got white. I think for the Powerbeats Pro, there's not white, but it's like a beige kind of color. So
it's bony or whatever, it's ivory, they call it.
Yeah, ivory. Yeah, I was thinking like elephant. Yeah, so the color is a little bit different too, which kind of, you know, you can imagine a lot more colors on the line. They're all available at launch starting this past Wednesday. They got leaked a lot. So the original embargo was Wednesday with everything else that came out this week. But then Sunday night, it's like, we're going to release these, or we're going to announce these on Monday morning. So it's like, okay. But it was because they were literally like showing up in stores.
Yeah, you could buy them.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
Yeah. So it was pretty bad. But yeah,
they're cool though. They're very good entry into the lineup.
Yeah. And, you know, as a parent, I've got all kind of perspective on like, you know, would I ever buy my kid $250 headphones? Heck no. You know, but $150 headphones, if they go on sale a little bit too and everything, like, sure.
Yeah, you can imagine these being $99 pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And they're, I mean, they're modern for that. The only thing that's left that sticks out to me in terms of it's in the new age, but it's old now, is Beats X, because they've got the chip from the AirPods 1 design. And
yeah,
they're arguably not very durable, something that you mentioned. And a lot of people were like, that's correct. So I wonder if those get updated or just go away.
Yeah, both Beats X and the Powerbeats 3 have a bit of a reputation for dying quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully the Powerbeats 4 are good, you know, or at least better.
Yep,
so you don't have to buy them.
It is a new design. I mean, it's the Powerbeats Pro design. So it's good stuff. Yep.
Great. So that was Monday. And then on Wednesday, boom, we got the Mac and the iPad stuff. So firstly, there was the Mac Mini update, which was buried at the bottom of the MacBook Air press release.
It does not get reason. A mini section for that.
A mini update for the mini Mac. It's the same Mac Mini, but now you get double the storage capacity.
So same processor, same graphics, same RAM.
Same prices, but now the cheapest model is 256 gigabytes, and then the model above that is now 512 gigabytes, where they used to be 128 and 256.
So it's more of like a price cut, and then they get rid of the lowest configuration?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, exactly. You can look at it like that.
I wonder what his model...
Although it's not a price cut, because the base price is still the same.
Yeah, but it's like, if the base model went away, and then everything else moved down the line, right? It's sort of like when the old Mac Pro
got... Yeah, exactly, yeah. So
would you call it this a 2020 Mac Mini, or would you?
I mean, I guess, but in a way, it's just kind of like a different spec for the old one. Like, yeah. I would be interested to see if when someone gets one, whether the model identifier is any different.
Sure.
If you see what I mean.
Yes.
It's literally just the internals being changed out. It's funny to laugh at, right? But if you remember the history of the Mac Mini, this is better than what you get some years. Like,
that's right, yeah.
The Mac Mini would go 4 years without any update at all.
Yeah, we're on like year longer. 2, right? Or so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if they're going to give it a small, essentially a price value improvement, that's fine. Like, I think the Mac Mini market is well accustomed to not having big upgrades every 2 years. And frankly, it's small enough that it probably doesn't deserve updates on that regular basis.
That's right. What is the base storage? It was 128, now it's 256. Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
Which is good, because that's a story we'll talk about a little bit more later, is 256 as a base minimum for these new Macs. And... Mm-hmm. You know, I was a big fan of that 12-inch MacBook, and in 2015, it started at 256. You could not buy one for 128 gigabyte, even though it was $1,300, you know, it was pricey. They just wouldn't let you pay less for that storage, and it came to a point where, you know, it wasn't getting touched, and I would argue, well, just make a 128 gigabyte version if you're going to do it for the Air and the Mini and all these other computers. But that went away. So I feel good about anytime the Mac begins at 256, because 128 for a Mac feels like, these days, it feels like 64 did, you know, a little while ago.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I will take any update, big or small, for Apple's like non-essential lines, right? Mm-hmm. They could easily have done nothing and just been like the Trashcan Mac Pro, where it was the same price for the same components for literally like 5 years before they then finally, you know, switched up a little bit when everyone started complaining, and then it took them another 2 years before they actually did a redesign. So. I'll take anything. It'll take anything. Like the Mac Mini, it's on a perfectly fine track. Everyone's happy. We all know that a VPN protects your privacy and your security. But what you can also do is use a VPN to evade geographic content blocks and access movies and TV shows that simply aren't available to you in your country, but are to someone else somewhere in the world. Use ExpressVPN to change your location. Well, not literally, but when you connect to ExpressVPN, you can choose the physical location of the server it looks like you're appearing from. So you can appear to be from somewhere else to sites like Netflix, Hulu, iPlayer, YouTube. The list goes on and on and on. Are you in the US and you want to watch Doctor Who or something like Blackadder? You can fire up ExpressVPN, set your location to the UK, and you can see the same content library as I do when I use Netflix in Britain. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you are located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. There are loads of VPNs out there, but ExpressVPN stands apart as being ridiculously fast. You can stream HD video without buffering or lag whilst proxying over the VPN connection. You can use ExpressVPN across all of your devices, from iPhone, Android, games consoles, smart TVs, and so much more. You can watch what you want, on the go, on the big screen, wherever you are. And if you use our special link right now, that's expressvpn.com/happyhour, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. You can find the link in the show notes. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself. Go to expressvpn.com/happyhour to get started. MacBook Air is actually a substantial improvement, and that has dropped the price. So it was $10.99 and now it's $9.99 starting price. And for education now, it's $8.99. And for some markets, certain like K-12 and stuff, they're even doing a $7.99 config.
Oh, cool.
Which is accessible. And so what the base storage is 256 gigabytes. So it's doubled again because the MacBook Air used to be 128, so now it's 256 base.
Right where the 12-inch was,
yeah. So that'd be the $9.99 and the $8.99 version,
but for a lot less money.
And then they're doing they're keeping a 128 gig, but only selling it through education channels at $7.99.
Yeah, that's good. Sorry.
Yeah, which is great. Like, and the $9.99 price point is special because it's before you get to four digits, and there's a big difference in demand and interest from $10.99. to $9.99, way disproportionately more than the $99 price difference, right? Like, So it's great that they finally got there, because when the 2018 MacBook Air came in, there was the consternation that they'd missed the mark, and it was like $11.99, and then they still had to keep the old MacBook Air design, the non-Retina one, around to maintain the $9.99 price. And so when they dropped the price of the new MacBook Air from $11.99 to $10.99, it was close enough for them to stop selling the old one, at least in mainstream channels. They still sold it in education markets, but it was gone from general public. And now they finally managed to get it down to the magic $9.99 price point. And I believe the old Air, you can't even buy it now anymore from the education site. So
for the best. And the keyboard's
long arc
good.
Of the MacBook Air is finally back down to the price point that it should be.
Yeah, and the keyboard's good.
Yeah.
You can actually, regardless of the price and everything, it was like, but don't buy it. Like, it's not fixed yet. And this new one is fixed. So this could be, in my opinion, $1,400. It's like, well, price is terrible, but whatever. The keyboards work, so it's good. But this is like good on all fronts. It's got better specs, better price, functional keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the same Magic Keyboard from the 16-inch MacBook Pro, unsurprisingly. That leaves the 13-inch MacBook Pros as the outliers now. They're the ones carrying on the butterfly for the time being.
Yeah.
We expect to be sorted out sometime this year.
How awkward, though, that it's like the middle Mac that's not fixed yet. Instead of, like, they've got the highest end one, and then they've got the entry level, but then in the middle,
I do wonder how popular the 13-inch MacBook Pro is. Like, they say in this press release that the MacBook Air is their most popular Mac.
Oh, okay.
So that has to be number one.
Yeah.
And then you'd assume most professionals are going to the 16-inch, you think? Like, I don't know quite how popular the 13-inch one is. Maybe it's their least popular laptop.
It used to be that the most popular one was the MacBook, 13-inch MacBook, non-Pro.
Yeah, which kind of was a MacBook Pro-ish, but it wasn't really.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I feel like the MacBook Air, encroaches on the 13-inch MacBook Pro's domain by quite a lot.
Like, yeah, it was that non-Retina MacBook Pro that was still popular with like Windows switchers and everything.
And that had the optical drive and...
It stayed on for way too long. Yeah, with this one, you know, in with the foresight of looking at what supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo predicts is that there will be a 14-inch version of the MacBook Pro 13-inch or 13-inch. So with that, then you can see just a much clearer difference between each model, where you've got the Air with this set of specs and this price at 13.3 inches, and the bigger one with the thinner bezels and a touch bar and better specs and everything costs more. But it's, you know, and then it gets the new keyboard too. And then the 16-inch. So you've got like not just like visually, especially visually, like you can look at the size and see what's good, better, best in terms of.
Yeah, they're definitely almost there to a good lineup of like a clearly differentiated lineup.
For the first time in years.
Unless they do something tricksy where they keep a 13.3 inch MacBook Pro around as well as the new 14 inch one, which would be upsetting. But
yeah, they didn't with the 15 though. So
correct, that is right. Yeah. So at the moment we've got 2 13.3s and then the 16-inch line. So. And on the horizon, it seems like we could get to the point where we just have the 13-inch Air and then the 14-inch MacBook Pro and then the 16-inch MacBook Pro, which would be a great lineup. So fingers crossed that's where they're going. It's 256 gigs base storage, like we said. Now you can get a maximum of 2 terabytes of SSD in the Air for the first time. The processors are different at the 10th generation Intel lines. They say you can get up to 2 times faster CPU and up to 80% faster graphics performance off the integrated graphics. The base model is an i3 and it's only like 1.1 gigahertz, but it's so hard to say at the moment how fast or slow like those are.
Right.
Like Intel just keeps changing the names of all these things. Like it's like, you know, what's an i3, what's an i5 really? It's just kind of like the middle bit at best. We did see the MacBook Air reviews come out today and people seemed pretty happy with them, but it wasn't like a really review because they'd only just got them. It was like very rushed hands-on. So we'll have to wait a little bit longer to see like performance benchmarks and stuff. But I think, fingers crossed, you can just recommend the $999 model and people will be happy.
Yeah, I mean, so in my family alone, I'm not going to change from the 16-inch MacBook Pro because this is the other end of the spectrum of what I need. But my wife, Kelsey, has been using her iPad Pro with the like, keyboard accessory and everything. And right now, we are looking at, does she want to do what we'll discuss later, which is the new keyboard stand with the trackpad for that, or is the MacBook Air a better thing? And the only factor that we've discovered so far is she wants to play The Sims that she used to play, and you can't do it on the iPad because it's like a Windows or PC, a Windows or Mac game. And so, yeah, she's that's like the big factor there. And it's like, well, I mean, we already have the iPad, so it would only be $300 or more or so for the keyboard stand. But you know, if you sold that,
Touch wood. Mm-hmm. There is now a base model MacBook for everyone.
Yeah, totally.
990 MacBook Air.
Very capable too. I mean,
yeah, like for a long time there were always asterisks of like, this model is great but it's expensive, you've got to upgrade the storage, or this model is great but oh, now we're on butterfly keyboards and the keyboard's not very good. And then it was like, but now I think we're finally back to a point where you could just tell anyone to go in the shop and buy the cheapest Mac laptop and they'll be happy with it. Yeah. Like the average customer, right? Like,
yep. And you get
send the MacBook Air off to uni, off to a university,
yeah,
and they could do their work on it. They could write papers on it. They could do what they needed to do and they'd be happy enough.
Yeah. Processor-wise, I believe this is the first time with this design that you've had an option that before it was just you get a processor with it and now
yes,
you get the cheese.
Yeah, because originally when the 2018 Air came out, there was a big deal about the fact that it was only one processor option, kind of like the iPad.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
now there's actually three, so you get the base model and then you can upgrade it twice.
Yeah. It wasn't that they were trying to simplify it. That was what they had available, I guess, or what
That's
they wanted
what they
to
had,
use.
Yeah, because there was like all this commotion at the time about the reason the 2018 Air was delayed because Intel was slowing them down and they had to do this like, you know, mad dash to actually get something out even in 2018. And so maybe that now explains why they only had one processor there, because that was all that was available. And now they at least have some minor options. Although it doesn't really seem like the difference between the lowest and the high one is going to be that great. But we'll have to wait for the Geekbench benchmarks to actually see if the high end CPU option is $250, which is like another 20% on the price. So
yeah.
We have to see if it's actually like close to 20% better.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time where you could really trick out those small MacBook Airs with like i9 processors.
I did do the thing where you press the max spec on all of them. Yeah. So that includes 2 terabyte storage. That's 16 gigs of RAM and the high-end CPU option. And it's $2,500.
So it's still not... expensive as much as like a Pro 16 inch.
Yeah,
right?
Well, most of the 16 inch Pro is like starting basically around that price.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm pretty happy. Like, it's boring, right? But it's good. It's like a perfunctory good update.
I mean, what would exciting be? An ARM processor, so like big changes there, or LTE for the first time, or 5G, you know, cellular built in, like, and we're not getting that yet.
I think the ARM stuff is probably going to be next year. And maybe we'll get hints of it at WWDC, and maybe we won't. We just have to keep an eye on that, because that's clearly the next generation for the Air kind of line is moving to ARM, because it would make, you know, it would have performance benefits, and it would have maybe press benefits, and it would have battery life benefits. But they're basically at the point now where the Air with an Intel architecture is, you know, basically as good as you're going to get. So I'm very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that drew the most attention this week was obviously the 2020 iPad stuff.
Yeah, so the iPad itself is like, okay, pretty cool, but it's the accessories and the OS updates that kind of make it so much more exciting. And that's why it overshadows the MacBook Air, because the MacBook Air is a really good story. But with the iPad stuff, you know, I think the iPad, like, if you've got the 2018 model, kind of take it or leave it, but it's all the stuff around it that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary, because you have the iPad itself, which is shipping next week, and so that has the new chips, the new camera, and a few other little bits.
Yeah.
But every single photo of it, obviously Apple's showing it alongside the new keyboard accessory that's got the trackpad on it, because they're kind of like paired together, and the iPad on its own is a small spec bump. Like, the iPad on its own is kind of like the Air on its own, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a kind of a boring-ish update. Yeah, we have the LiDAR scanner, which we'll talk about in a sec, but in general, what actually matters is, you know, slightly cheaper, you get more storage for the price, you get better performance, and you get an ultra-wide camera.
Mm-hmm.
But then all the focus is obviously on the keyboard and the keyboard stand with the trackpad and the OS update. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the accessory in a sec. Let's just cover the specs on the iPad.
Yeah.
So it's A12Z. Z. A12Z.
You say Z, I'll say Z. It'll trip everybody up.
Yeah. A12Z, which is interesting in itself, because obviously we were expecting the iPad Pro update would have an A13X, because the processors inside the current iPhone 11 series are A13s, and when they do the iPads that follow it, it's normally that year's revision with an X on the end to implement that to indicate it's the iPad version. The fact that they've still called it on the A12 series implies that the performance increase is probably quite small.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't shout about benchmarks too much. They say it's gone from a 7-core to an 8-core GPU, and it's got an enhanced thermal architecture and tuned performance controllers. They don't say this. They don't say anything about the CPU directly, which, if you read between the lines, kind of feels like the CPU is unchanged. Like, the actual silicon on the board for the CPU is the same as the 2018 one, which would then be why it's still called A12.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's got better thermals and better heat situation, it's going to be faster to some degree. You'd expect, right?
We
don't know how much yet, because no one's done reviews on it yet. But
yeah, this kind of echoes with the chip inside the Series 4 Apple Watch and the Series 5 Apple Watch, where it's a new name for some reason, but it's literally the same, you know, except it's got
they should have called it the S4Z.
that's when they have sleep tracking. But yeah. And so, like, if you've been waiting for a new iPad, you know, you've got an older one than 2018, and you want the best Pro you can get these days, couple of things. One is the 2018 model was state of the art for a long time. Like, mine doesn't feel ancient at all. You don't have one yet, right?
No.
Yeah. And so if you've been holding out, like, this might be the way to go, because, you know, there's a chance this gets updated in a few months or so with something different. But
we still have the mini LED rumors kind of hanging over all this thing. So there is a chance that there's going to be a 5G mini LED one at the end of the year.
Yeah. Do you think it's fair to say that the Quo stuff often, like, the time he sees when it's there in the pipeline, but the timing isn't necessarily always there. Like,
yeah, it can be.
Another example, like, for iPhone stuff, we know the schedule, so it's easy to assume. But for something like the Apple high-end on-ear or over-ear headphones, like, he had those 2 years ago, and they're only just now, you know, resurfacing.
Although I think 2 years ago he didn't say they were coming out that year, to be fair to him.
I think he did, but maybe not.
I think he said late next, the year after, which would have been the end of 2019.
Oh, okay.
And then obviously he did another report last year where he said they were coming this year. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. He did generally, like, if he's not right first time, he kind of updates it on the whole. Obviously sure, he makes mistakes. He's not perfect, right?
But the specs are what we really care about, not the timing necessarily. Yeah. So that's what's so good about Quo.
Yeah. And in the current environment, who knows what's going on with the supply chain, right? Like, everything's completely wacky left, right, and center.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of people saying, how is Apple even releasing these products in the current climate? It's just so insensitive. It's like, look, the coronavirus is a rough situation, but the problem is business kind of has to try and continue as normal as much as it can. Like, this isn't going to be a thing that's going to be over within a month. And, like, how long can you hold these products for before they come out? This, we don't know yet whether we're going to be in this kind of, like, disruptive state for a year. Like, they can't hold these iPads for a year before they come out. They just kind of have to just do it when they're ready. And then,
well, I think what's key here is that for everything we've seen so far, there's a story to it that is, you could already buy this product yesterday, but if you buy it now, you get a better product with better specs for either the same price or less. And so it isn't like, you know, this would be a bad year to introduce a more expensive MacBook Pro, you know, like they did.
What about a $300 keyboard accessory?
It's not out until May, so you get a pass.
I mean, realistically, these things have been in development. What are they going to do? Just not release them? It seems a bit stupid.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's like a utilitarian approach to it too, which is that, you know, if you didn't have XYZ, you'd be worse off. And so now you've got a better XYZ. And so this is part of their, you know, they're a company in business because they provide a service, not just like services, but like a service with the hardware and the software. And so today, this week, they're providing a better service than they did last week. That's how I see it.
We are sponsored this week by Samebox, the easiest way to get your email under control and hit that magic mark of inbox zero. If email is an overwhelming mess for you, like it is for so many people, Samebox is the tool you need to use. Samebox takes advantage of artificial intelligence to monitor your inbox, making sure you see only important messages and you aren't distracted by the rest. As messages come in, Samebox does the triage for you. Important emails stay in your inbox and everything else is put into your Sane Later folder for you to peruse and review at your convenience. It makes it super easy to separate out the email that you need to immediately pay attention to and the other stuff that you can get to later. Even better, you don't need to use a special app or weird plugin to take advantage of the Samebox service. One of the best features of Samebox is the black hole. Do you have annoying senders who email you day in and day out? It could be a brand that refuses to stop messaging you, no matter how many times you click that unsubscribe button. Well, just drag messages to the same black hole folder, and you never have to hear from that sender again. That's it. On the other hand, let's say you've sent a message to someone that you need to keep tabs on their reply. The Sane Reminders feature will watch to see if they reply, and if they don't by a date that you specify, Samebox tells you so that you can be aware someone is dragging their feet, and then it's up to you to naturally follow up with them. Samebox works with every single email server that has ever been created. There's nothing to learn and nothing to install. See it for yourself by visiting sanebox.com/9to5Mac, where you can get a 2-week free trial and a $25 credit. That's sanebox.com/9to5Mac. That's number 9, number 5. Samebox.com/9to5Mac. Our thanks to Samebox for their support of 9to5Mac Happy Hour. Yeah, and if you are buying, like if you were going to buy an iPad Pro for the same price, you're getting a better one, even if it is small changes, right? Because you have the A12Z, and then you have the cameras, and so it does have like a square bump, but it's more like the iPhone 11, not the iPhone 11 Pro, because this one only has the wide and the ultra-wide camera.
Yeah.
And then it has the LiDAR scanner on the right where you'd expect the third camera to be, but it's the LiDAR sensor thing. Now, interestingly, the ultra-wide camera is not the same as the iPhone 11, because the iPhone 11 camera sensors are all 12 megapixel. Either you've got two of them or you've got three of them, but they're all 12 megapixel. On the iPad, the wide camera, so the normal camera, is 12 megapixel, but the ultra-wide camera is only 10 megapixel. Which is cost. A bit random.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on there, whether it's cost or whether it's like they just had to do it to fit it in the little square, because the thing that really surprised me the most about this is how big the LiDAR sensor is. Like,
right.
I was kind of imagining it that it was going to be quite small, like a small hole.
Like, but more like what you see on the front of your iPhone 10 or later than
yeah.
Because it's like, it's big and vast. It's empty, you know, so it doesn't like stick out, but it's a big part of that square.
Yeah, like it's almost the same size as one of the camera lenses. Like, it almost could be a camera lens in terms of how big it is. And so maybe they just didn't have the room to put the same 12 megapixel sensor and they have a 10 megapixel one, or it's cost. Although these things aren't super cheap, right? They're still like $800, so it'd be weird. I don't know. It's a weird situation. We'll have to see if like the actual quality of the photos is that much worse in practice. The LiDAR scanner, which we've obviously up to now been calling the time of flight sensor. Apple's branding it as the LiDAR scanner because it's based on like...
It does time of flight.
Mm-hmm. It does time of flight, yeah. It's the LiDAR scanner that does time of flight.
Yeah, time of flight is what it does. And LiDAR
something and ranging. It's that's what the LiDAR stands for. It's like light, information, depth, and ranging. Something along that line.
Yeah, pretty good acronym. I mean, it does time of flight, and LiDAR is how it does that. So that makes sense.
Correct, yeah. And so we were expecting to see that sensor or something very similar to it on the iPhone 12 later in the year, but it's here on the iPad first, and Apple says you can use it to measure distances of objects up to 5 meters away, and that enables it to do instant augmented reality placement and improve motion capture and pupil occlusion. So on the current phones that only have normal cameras, it uses the parallax and machine learning and some clever algorithms.
You have to kind of wave your phone around.
You have to kind of wave your phone around a bit, especially when it's dark. It doesn't work as well. Mm. When it's brighter, it has a better job at finding like the flat surfaces. This, because it's just actually directly measuring the depth data in the room, it shouldn't have to do any of that setup. And the stability and the accuracy of all of the augmented reality objects in the scene should be way better. But that's it.
That's it.
Like they don't even support portrait mode on the rear lens, which I thought was like a sure thing. It's like, you, not only now have you got two lenses, which the iPhone 11 can do, right? Because it's got two lenses. It's got ultra wide and wide. So, and it can do portrait mode. And you've got a 3D sensor, which is like the Face ID sensor, because the iPads can do portrait mode on the front because they use the true depth sensor, the same as the Face ID one. But on the back, there's still no portrait mode, having two cameras and the LiDAR sensor, which seems kind of wacky to me because all they're shipping this as is just like, you know those AR things you don't use? Well, now they're better.
Yeah.
Like there isn't really a strong feature for why you should buy this iPad now with that scanner in it.
Yeah. Not yet.
Not yet. Maybe there will be down the road. Maybe the Gobi app that we were talking about before will lean into this. It probably will do when the iPhone's ready in the autumn. But it is kind of strange that they just kind of like whacked it in here without anything to like back it up. Because portrait mode, you would have been a perfect explanation for it, in my opinion. Because they could say, we've got really accurate portrait mode. What I'm questioning is what the limitations of the LiDAR scanner are. Because all they say is it can measure distances up to 5 meters away. I'm wondering if there's like a minimum distance, because you know, like on the front thing, you have to, like the Face ID on the front, it has like a focus range. Like you can't be really close to it. You can't be really far away from it. There's like this distance where it works.
Mm-hmm. And there's lighting conditions and everything. Yeah.
And maybe that's the same on the LiDAR scanner as well, which precludes them from doing portrait mode because it has to be like further away than you would be for taking a portrait photo. The video, you know, happily shows this entire room like lit up with dots of supposedly it's been scanned, but we have to actually like see the reality before we can.
Yeah, and so far we've had MacBook Air reviews, but not iPad Pro 2020 reviews, right?
Correct.
Mm. So next week.
Next week, yeah. And it'd be interesting to see whether the reviews, they also get the trackpad keyboard accessory or not. Like, because the again the key the magic keyboard doesn't come out until May, whereas this comes out next week. So
I can see them receiving like having it paired with a trackpad or something and saying this is for now, and
they just send a magic trackpad with it, like, yeah, next door.
Yeah.
And then finally, just to round up the specs of the iPad, they've added a better microphone system. So they're using the same terminology like they did with the 16-inch MacBook Pro, where it has studio quality mics, right? And then you know what that kind of is based on the 16-inch MacBook Pro quality.
Yeah,
better mics than basically anything else you've ever heard, but not as good as like an actual dedicated microphone.
Yes.
And the base model used to be 64 gigs. Now it's 128 gigs. And the price is the same. It's $799 for the 11-inch and $999 for the 12.9-inch.
And so if you wanted 128 gigabyte before, you'd go from 800 to 950?
900, yeah.
900 or 950?
Pretty sure it was 900.
Okay. I was thinking it was a big
deal. No, I don't think they... No, before they didn't have 128. It used to go 64, 256. That's
yeah. And then so it was $150 more for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Whereas now it's just straight from 128 to 256.
Cool. Nice.
And it still maxes out at a terabyte.
And they've, yeah, unlike the MacBook Air, that goes to 2 terabytes, and they've all got the 6 gigabytes of RAM instead of 4, except for...
Yeah, 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 because we found some code that indicated that they now all have 6 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was just the terabyte one.
Which is still curious, because it was only the 1 terabyte before. Everybody else had 4 gigabytes, or every other storage capacity had 4 gigabytes of RAM. And there's not yet really been a thing that you can only do with 6 gigabytes. Of RAM.
Yeah, the apps just kind of stay around for a bit longer.
Yeah, your Safari tabs, all your hidden windows that you forgot you had are still in cache. Yep. Well, the hardware itself, you know, like I mentioned at the top of this section, it's interesting if you don't have the 2018 iPad. This is a great upgrade point unless you're waiting for something different. What are you thinking? Because you could, at this point, I guess, you could get a cheaper 2018 iPad Pro. You could get this one, you know, or you could do nothing. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, like... The cheaper 2018 Pro is kind of attractive.
Yes.
Like, I'm kind of, you know, nonplussed about the LiDAR scanner at the moment because I don't know what I'd use it for. Right? Like, I don't use any of the AR stuff.
And presumably you'll upgrade your iPhone at a certain point, which will have this LiDAR stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, like, I'm probably going to upgrade the phone this year, I think, although I did get the 11 Pro, so maybe it's technically this should be a year or I don't. Like, I don't know. It's still up in the air. Like, it's hard. Like, the problem, these things are expensive, right?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
The iPad is expensive, and it isn't essential for me.
Mm-hmm.
The phone is kind of essential. The laptop obviously is. My laptop is also aging, so I'm kind of in the year to upgrade the laptop as well. The iPad... Again, we're in the situation where the software capability is still not quite there for me to be able to do proper work on it, personally.
Mm. Getting close, but not there
Getting
yet.
Closer. My brother did ask me about the new Pros, and I said to him, if you want to upgrade your iPad, I would see what the price drops are on the 2018 model and get that instead. Because what are you paying for? You're paying for the slightly better chip, and you're paying for the LiDAR scanner, and then you're paying for the ultra-wide camera.
Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's better storage.
If you could find, like, a $200 discount on the 2018 Pro, I would probably snap that out instead. If I was, you know, if I was going to buy one at all.
Because mm-hmm.
Then you're bringing an $800 purchase down to, like, $600. And the big factor in the equation here is we believe the Magic Keyboard will be compatible with the 2018 iPad Pro.
Yeah, so Magic Keyboard is the name of this thing, which is also the name of just the standalone keyboard for like a Mac Mini or iMac. It's Magic Keyboard.
And the keyboard on the laptops are also called Magic Keyboards.
That's right.
Magic Keyboard on the MacBook Air, you got the Magic Keyboard you can buy separately, and now you got the Magic Keyboard for the iPad.
And the history of this for the iPad has been sort of, you had in the iPad 1 era, you had the... Magic Keyboard with iPad dock,
and that was portrait only,
right? And it was for, like, you know, you're writing out your next novel. Then they scrapped that with iPad 2, and there was no keyboard accessory, but it was just that was the invent of the smart cover. And so you could cover the screen, it woke up when you opened the cover with sleep, like, kind of function. You could stand it up like a TV screen, or you could prop it up like you're typing on the on screen keyboard. Then eventually we get to have the smart keyboard which is comes with the iPad Pro and works its way down. And then you've got a Smart Folio and Smart Keyboard Folio.
Yeah.
Now we have Magic Keyboard, and it's like the ultimate accessory to be had. It seems
and
like
they're still selling the Smart Keyboard Folios.
Yeah. So the difference, like, I guess Magic Keyboard is in the name, but it's sort of trackpad that you're getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Magic Keyboard, but it's the one with the trackpad.
Yeah. I mean, and it is I assume a better keyboard. Depends on how you feel about typing on the Smart Keyboard that we've had so far.
Because the Smart Keyboard's like fabric keys, right?
Yeah, I don't dislike it at all. Like, you know, I guess it might be better for consistency that I have the same keyboard on my MacBook and iPad, or, you know, Mac desktop and iPad. But
yeah, this one's going to feel like a MacBook Air because it's butterfly switches, not butterfly, scissor key switches.
Yeah, I think it'll be sturdier in your lap, and they did a good job of, like, you know, I love the design of this thing, like the way that there's a hinge sort of, right, but there's not like kickstand mode or anything, and
yeah,
it's
like
adjustable,
it's really clever.
Yeah, it's like Johnny Ive looking, you know.
It's hard to describe because it's like, you have the flat base, which has the keyboard and the trackpad on it. And the trackpad is smaller than what you get on a Mac, right? Because of the available space, the trackpad is smaller.
Mac trackpads are huge these days. Like, yeah. It looks more like the old Mac trackpads.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got kind of like a... I think they've got like a metal support that you can move up and down. Because and then the top bit folds backwards, which is where the iPad sits, and it connects magnetically. But it almost looks like it shouldn't work with the angle that it's at. Apple calls it floating. Obviously, it's not actually floating because it's stuck down. But I think the bit that folds upwards, it must be like some sort of like metal structure that keeps it in place, because it can't be fabric, because it just fall over. And so you lose like the typing. You use like the fold around. Like, you can't fold the keyboard back on itself anymore. But what you've got instead is like this incredibly good stand with incredible adjustment. Like, they say you can have 130 degrees of freedom of adjustment.
Yeah, which is huge. You've only had two positions before.
Two modes, yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't that different, and it depended on what size as to what degree it was.
And there's less, like, origami involved, because you literally just pick it up and it'll fold back by itself. And if you want to use the iPad without being in the case, you just pop it off. You just pop it off the magnet,
which I love, because I love using my iPad as just the tablet, like nothing around it, or like in the case.
This is almost like the charging station, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So you could set this on your desk, and then if you actually wanted to, you know, do some proper typing and stuff, you use it at the desk, and then if in the evening you just want to chill out in the lounge, you just pick the iPad off the magnets and then leave the stand where it is, and then when you come back, you can just pop it back on again.
This would be a really good product if they didn't even have the trackpad, you know?
Yeah. It's almost just like you know, the Logi Base they did before with the Logitech?
Everyone hated it, but I loved it.
Everyone hated it. Yeah, apart from you.
Yes.
But this is like a better version of that.
Yes.
Plus, it has a keyboard and a trackpad connected to it.
Yes.
And you can carry it around. Because you can, there's a USB-C port on the hinge. Mm-hmm. You can do pass-through power on the docking station part of it. So you can charge it literally just by connecting it. It connects to the iPad with the smart connector, so you don't have to charge the actual keyboard bit separately. But if you want to charge the iPad while you're using it, you can just plug in on the flat part of it, in the hinge of the case, and it will, you know, funnel power through the iPad itself.
Like, not a cord up in the air, and then if you want to do something
it's not
that,
dangling around in the air. It's, like, incredible.
It literally has more ports than the 12-inch MacBook at that point. Because the 12-inch MacBook, you can charge it, or you can connect something to it, like a peripheral. With this, you can charge it, and you can connect, like, an SD card reader to it.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want with the iPad Pro's port, and just have it charge through the stand. Mm-hmm. And presumably, if you're charging through the stand, it won't be as fast a charging as if you're going direct, because the smart connector probably has limits to how fast it charges. But it'll probably be fast. It must be enough for it to not, like, drain while you're using it, right?
Yeah, so, and you can't use the USB-C port on the Magic Keyboard stand for data or anything, right?
No.
Like, you don't get two USB-C data ports, but you do get... You don't take up your data port, so it's
and obviously the keyboard data goes through the smart connector like normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And did we mention the keyboard's backlit?
It's backlit. Yeah, I mean,
it's backlit. Digitime's got it right. The keys are glowing.
They are glowing. This whole thing is really cool. I mean, and so you've got one color. You've got a version for the 11 and a version for the 12.9 inch iPad. Price difference there between the bigger and the smaller one. So it's $299 versus $349, and I would be in the bigger one there. And I gotta say, like, man, I mean, it's more money, but if I were buying this all at one time and I was looking at like $1,000 plus iPad, $350, like, man, you're in for $1,400 before you get out the door, or you could buy a Mac, you know. And it's like, well, but then, you know, if when I'm not buying it all at once, I'm not thinking about it that way, and it makes it a little bit easier to digest and just know, well, you've also got the touchscreen stuff and the pencil stuff, and you know, it can be a tablet, and this is like the best embracement of it being a tablet of any iPad accessory that Apple's made yet.
Yeah, like you can tell there's a lot of engineering going into make this keyboard stand, but it is expensive. Like, it is going to be pretty niche, I think. Like, if you're going in the store, like an average customer, I think they're going to be turned off by how expensive it is, personally. Like, sure, I would buy it if I was buying it. If I was buying the new iPad, I'd definitely... Because you'd have to, right? Like, I don't know how you couldn't.
Well, you choose, like, LTE, or you choose cellular for $130 or $150 or so, or you choose, you know, the accessory for double that. Although, you know, arguably, it's very different needs, and this could be what you need. It's just you're not... I guess they say for the iPad itself, they say faster than most PC laptop chips. The MacBook Air, if you're looking for like a laptop, is a really good value now looking at it compared to this, because at least, you know, the lowest you can get is $800 plus $300. So you're in for $1,100, and you know, you've got
and that's only the 11 inch one.
Only 11 inch one with no cellular. So you can't not sell it on a Mac either, but, and it is half the storage of the Mac now, because the Mac would be 256, this is 128. So it's really complicated in terms of deciding. But basically, like, it's so good that there's the iPad Air and iPad Mini and iPad that are in the lineup, because this is expensive, this territory.
Yeah, like, I think it's so expensive that the Smart Keyboard Folio probably outsell it.
I can see that.
I just think it's too expensive. Like, it's not a failure, but I think in terms of, if you look at a sales, and Apple's not going to share the sales chart, but if you're in a store and they still have the keyboard folios like in stock and stuff, like, I think a lot of people would just be like, that does the same thing. I want that. Like, I know this one has the trackpad on it, which is like a whole separate domain, but
yeah,
I still think it's expensive for what it is. Like, it's hard to say, right? Because it's so cool. It is really cool.
So you can buy a Apple Magic Mouse for, what is it, $100 or
$120, I think.
Yeah. And then you can, or the trackpad is, yeah, like $130. You can buy the keyboard for about $100 or so. So you can buy those two things separate and have a mouse or a trackpad and a keyboard, like the same keyboard basically, for less than you can this. But this is the integration. You know, it's also a stand. It's also a cover.
Yeah, it's so cool, but it is also
it's expensive. Yeah,
because like $350, you could buy the cheapest iPad, which is a fantastic iPad. That's less. That's $329.
Yes.
You get an entire iPad. Or you can
I'm totally buying it, by the way. Like, I'm glad it's not out right now and it's in May. Because it feels less worse. But no reason to upgrade my iPad. And this is a big upgrade to my existing iPad, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, you can get a lot of extra value out of your current. And there is a bit of contention about this, because on some pages it says it's only compatible with the 2020 model. But then when you actually go to buy it, it says compatible with the third gen iPad Pro as well.
Yeah, so, and I don't think this is the only product that says that either. I think that's just something they do. Because I found a second product that has the same thing, where its compatibility is in question on its product page, but on the... Yeah. So
I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be compatible with the 2018 one.
Me neither.
You just have a big gap where the rectangle is on the back.
Yeah, which is okay. Camera. Yeah, I won't mind that at all.
Yeah. So let's talk about the trackpad part, right? So you have a trackpad which does click. They call it like even clicking all over it. So I think it doesn't have the force feedback of like the force touch trackpads, but it does like click all down all at once. So we have to see how that feels. It does support gestures, and this all integrates with iPadOS 13.4, which comes out on Tuesday, March 24th, and as well as all the features we've seen in the betas, they're also releasing like a customer-orientated, not just an accessibility feature, a customer-first version of like cursor support on the iPad. It doesn't work on the phone, it's iPad only.
Yeah.
But you don't have to use the Magic Keyboard. It does work with... there's like a Logitech's making a keyboard case with a trackpad in it. You can use the Magic trackpad, you can use third-party mice. Like, it's not just limited to this, you know, it's not proprietary to the Apple Magic Keyboard, which is great. And what you get on the screen is like a little circle, which is kind of like a substitute for your finger, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can move it around with the trackpad. You can do two-finger scrolling. When you move the cursor to like a button or like an interactive element, the cursor can kind of like morph into the background of the button. And so unlike a traditional PC cursor where you have like this arrow with this very fine point and it doesn't do anything but you just click down, this cursor is more dynamic and it's more like, it's kind of like a mix of a Mac cursor and what you get on the Apple TV. Because like if you hover over an app icon, it will kind of look Apple TV-ish, where it kind of enlarges and you get the little shadow.
It's like clearly in focus. Yeah.
It's like a focus engine system, but not quite. Like, it's really interesting.
Well, I could argue that the TV should get this, where you've got focus when you're over something, but that, you know, like my TV itself has this magic wand mode where you do get a cursor.
That's like the LG system, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the TVOS, you know, it could be like their one new feature a year where they change from strictly focus to focus plus pointer. And it's, then you can select things that are apart without having to navigate to them. You just wave to them, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting.
It's good. Yeah.
And it definitely assuaged some of my like criticism of when we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, because especially because it's still a circle, which means apps can't make elements too close together because you couldn't click on them. So you're not going to have the problem of like apps just assuming you've got like an arrow cursor there. Mm-hmm. And they've clearly thought about it with the button shapes. Now, I have tried this out very briefly, like for, you know, an hour or so, and it feels great. I can see how some people are going to not like the morphing transitions. I think they're good, but I can see how some people are going to be like, this is too much. It's almost like overwhelming to see so much, to see the cursor there, and then it flicks into the toolbar button, and then it goes, and it turns into the little rectangle, and then you move it a bit more, and it comes out. I think they've done the right thing. There is an accessibility option where you can turn that off, where you just have the circle permanently on the screen and it will just put the like the background highlights on the elements, but the circle doesn't morph into them. So if you do want something that's more traditional, you can turn that on. App support, from what I found, is good in like the core Apple apps like Mail and Safari and Messages. Once you go a bit further afield, I think Apple's still got some more work to do. Kind of like how they had a bit of work to do when the Apple Watch Series 4 first came out with the digital crown and the little indents. It wasn't just quite right on some of their apps, and they eventually got around to fixing it. That's kind of what it's like with the cursor support. You don't get the morphing animations in places where I think you should, or where how it's done, it's not quite right. Like, one area where I do think it's kind of wrong at the moment is in like a toolbar. So if you have an iPad toolbar where you've got like three elements in it, it will morph into the first toolbar item, but there's kind of like a gap between the first item and the second, so it will morph back to the circle and then back to the rectangle again for the second item. So it's a bit, it could be streamlined a bit better in some places, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure this is the kind of thing that literate on, but this is like what you're getting on Tuesday. And then the third-party apps, if they're using standard native controls, it will operate like how you would expect. If there's stuff that's more custom, then you'll have to wait for an app update for them to do stuff like the pointer animations. And when you hover over like a text field, the circular pointer automatically changes to the text input cursor, like the straight little like line, so you can immediately select text. It's very clever.
And you don't have to have the Magic Keyboard for iPad, which is the $300 to $350 accessory. You can use almost anything, is that right?
Yeah. I think the Magic Trackpad is the only external trackpad that works.
Okay.
but you can use basically any mouse.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then on the track, and then on the Magic Mouse and on trackpad, in addition to controlling the cursor and doing like two finger scrolling, you can also do other gestures too. So they have like basically the same gestures that you can do for the home indicator, you can do on the trackpad itself. So if you do three finger swipe up, it will make the app go away. You can do three finger left and right to switch between apps, kind of like how you do if you were dragging on the home indicator directly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can open Notification Center by going to the top of the screen and kind of like pushing against the top edge, and it will bring down the Notification Center. If you want Control Center, you just go to the top right of the screen, you click on the Wi-Fi, the location, the battery button,
mm-hmm.
those little light indicators, you click on that and it brings down Control Center.
I hope a future update to iPadOS makes those not modal. Like, I love on the Mac where I do a hot corner in the top right and I put my cursor there for like a second and Notification Center pops open,
yeah.
And I can see everything, and this, and I can also see like 90% of my desktop screen too. There's no reason to have it be this whole full screen thing with like only content in the middle, you know?
Yeah, like the big like background blur type thing.
Yeah,
that is one thing I think where iOS 11 did it better, where Control Center and the multitasking tray were combined. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep.
But they split out because of the iPhone, obviously, and they try to make it match the iPhone experience. But there's definitely more they can do there. There's a lot of iPad stuff, software stuff they can do. You've got the Notification Center gesture, you've got the Control Center gesture. You can go to the bottom of the screen with the dock, and you can reveal the dock directly without having to do anything fancy. And if you go to the far right of the screen, you can open the slideover apps, which is nice. So if you have a trackpad, it definitely speeds up some of the multitasking stuff. Because
sure.
Not only can you switch left and right, switch between the primary app, you can also just go like straight to the right-hand side of the screen and the slideover apps will pop open, and then you can cycle through those. It's definitely like going to be a big boost for people that use, you know, iPad for productivity purposes. And it's still early. I think the way it's designed, it will avoid the majority of the problems and the concerns that I had from a couple of weeks ago. I don't want to like fully say it's fantastic. There are some edge cases where I'm like, oh, I don't know about this. But for the, in general, I think it's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So far I haven't tried this. So it comes out, the trackpad stuff comes in an iPad OS 13.4, which is released on March 24th next week. But you can use the beta version now, and I've got that installed, but I haven't tried it yet. And what I've found is that For times where I'm using my MacBook Pro like a laptop in my lap, or, you know, somewhere portable, on the go, then it needs to be one constructed, you know, build of something. It can't be like the mouse is over here on the side. And so that's what's great about the laptop form factor, is that you've got the keys there and the trackpad there. And even though it's more ergonomic to have a mouse over here on the side and the screen higher up, it's super portable and it goes with you without separate pieces. And so until Apple's Magic Keyboard for iPad comes, you know, is shipping in May, or, you know, Logitech's thing or whatever, then it won't be convenient yet for me, because I'll have to use the iPad at a desk environment. And that's just less likely. So until it's kind of an all-in-one construction and not just, you know, peripherals put together, then I don't think it'll be very useful for me. But when it does, you know, when you do have the new Magic.
Yeah, when you've got the unified whole.
Yeah, then it's like, all right, now we're talking. And I was telling you a few weeks ago, it's like I was on the couch, you know, had the keyboard, the Magic, or not Magic, I wish it was, but the Smart Keyboard Folio with the 12.9-inch iPad kind of, you know, using it on the couch. And I was in Messages, the only app, and I was just thinking, like, you know, this app needs to be smaller, and this view is so large that why can't I get, you know, get around without touch, and I'm using the keyboard. And so that new Magic keyboard for the iPad, I can't wait for it. That's the real story here for me. And so just in software, you know, I haven't even tried it yet. One thing I am curious about, and I also haven't tried this, is if you've, I think the answer might be no, but if you're running the macOS beta or the release coming in the future, and the new version on the iPad, and using Sidecar, like, would your, I guess with Sidecar, the iPad is like a second display for the Mac. So it's still just the pointy cursor and not, this new stuff. But
yeah,
because
you can't like touch the screen. You can only use the Apple Pencil with Sidecar.
Yeah. I feel like there's something they can do there now that there's this support, this feature. So maybe.
Maybe in like iOS 14, they could make it so that trackpad on the iPad could also move the mouse.
It would almost be like you would want like half sidecar where like your Mac is talking to your iPad, but you're controlling iPad apps and not Mac apps on a second display, you know, and you've got.
Right. So you like move. So like you moved your Mac trackpad to move the cursor on the iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. There used to be like Windows apps that would do that. So if you had like two Windows computers in the same room and you didn't want to like lean across, you could just make your current mouse move the other person's mouse.
Yeah, Logitech has software for that for all of their stuff where you sign in like with an account and then it can see it across the device.
Yeah, I think a mode for iPad would be pretty cool there.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because, yeah, like you, I don't think I would ever use an iPad and then like a dedicated trackpad to the side of it. It just feels a bit wrong and...
Like strictly for testing this feature in beta, basically.
Yeah, for testing it's fine, but for like day to day,
or if your iPad, like you're using it at a desk all the time, like you know, it's fine too. Because
yeah,
like
if you've got one of those like weird stands where they like you know raise it to eye level and stuff, obviously then maybe you would. But I still kind of think like the Magic Keyboard case is better, or the Logitech cases, which are cheaper potentially. Like you want something that's all in one.
Yeah. I mean, you don't use a separate trackpad with your Mac unless like it's broken, kind of thing. Or your MacBook, yeah. I mean. So it's kind of like the iPad can fill the role of desktop or laptop, depending on the situation. And having it separate is more like a desktop environment. And having it integrated is a laptop environment. And that's what we're looking for. Yeah.
So overall, I'd say I'm like really impressed with the keyboard accessory. Like the stand looks amazing. There is a slight question about how stable it will be. And in all of Apple's advertising, it doesn't go anywhere. But, you know, we want to test that out for real before we, like, right. You know, endorse it wholeheartedly, because it'd be a bit awkward if you sat it on your lap and it kept falling over or toppling and stuff. But it looks like it's going to be stable, which is fantastic. And then the way that you can just pull the iPad off the magnets and the stand just stays where it is just great. The charging part of it is a brilliant idea, so you don't have to have the cable waving around in the air. The keyboard is great. You've got backlighting, you've got scissor switches, you've got plastic keys. It'll feel like a laptop. And the trackpad, I'd put it at like 80%
good. 80% good, nice.
Yeah, whereas before I was like 40% good.
Yeah, so. It's funny, I was thinking like 8 years ago in 2012, I was thinking, you know, I had my first iPad, which was the iPad 2. And I had a MacBook Air from 2012. And like the holdup from using the iPad only was I couldn't rip CDs. That was like the only holdup. And I had the adapter, you know, where you could do it with the MacBook Air or the SuperDrive. And man, like 8 years later, the holdups are a lot more sophisticated. But you can't rip CDs on any of them without, you know, some kind of a adapter.
Yeah, I really wish where Apple will go next and is another like market-leading app, whether that's some form of Final Cut for video editing, whether that's some version of like Xcode for iPad in some form so you can at least do some programming through it, whether that's, you know, Logic for iPad, like a proper Logic Pro for iPad. That's kind of where I think they've done so much with iPad hardware. iPad software is getting there. And at the moment, it just feels like we need companies to invest in like truly big productivity apps to like make people be able to spend $1,000 plus $350 and not feel bad about it.
What I need is a single new app called Blogger, and it's got one column of Twitter, and it's got like a half the screen is WordPress, and then like the other fourth is like a bunch of other stuff and squares, you know, that I need access to. So you get Slack over there and email, and you know, and it's like one screen, all this in one screen. Yeah.
You know, I've had ideas around that kind of thing, obviously, like to make myself. But the problem is there's so much risk in doing such a big app.
Yeah. Any API can break it. Like,
yeah. And just like in terms of market reception, right? Like it takes a long time to build a full productivity app like that. So you need big companies that can pay for it to get it done, right? And they can absorb the risk. And, you know, you're not going to get a bigger company that can absorb the risk than Apple itself. So
that's right.
And like Photoshop for iPad is kind of a good start in that direction because you're getting like Adobe on board, but the version they've shipped so far is still lacking a lot of big features, which makes it, you know, still kind of in the toy category for like professional artists, unfortunately. It's getting there. It really is getting there. And there are some, you know, I hope we have multitasking changes in the pipeline on the software side. But the combination of the iPad hardware, the trackpad support, the keyboard, it's close. It really is close than ever, for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, good start of the decade in terms of iPad productivity.
Yeah. And so that's all.
Yeah.
Only a few products.
Yeah. We'll have a lot
obviously,
more.
We're kind of still like questioning whether there will be other stuff soon. Like we had Coin, the leaker Coin on Twitter. He said to expect an iMac update, which didn't happen this week. We still have questions around the iPhone SE 2. When's that coming out? It was probably meant to be in March, but production delays have probably put it back a little bit. So we're still on the lookout for that. And then, you know, after some maybe like April products, we're then only a month away from WWDC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was a nice surprising week, and we've still got stories coming from iOS 14 and everything, and so we'll talk about some more of those next week when there's not this big hardware release.
And I'm sure we'll probably talk about the iPad a little bit more because there'll be reviews out next week probably. So
yeah,
and iOS 13.4 will be out for real, so we'll have a bit more time to formulate.
Yeah, that's right. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.